Welcome back to the Social Distance Podcast, guys. We're back, all three of us. George is back from the Giro. He talks us through his experiences there. We also touch on the Friends reunion. What else do we talk about, boys?
Oh, just general shit.
Someone mowed their lawns. It was interesting.
Yeah. Jonesy watched some dark YouTube.
Yeah. And we bring back Legend or Ballend, and we also bring in a new segment where we answer three fan questions at the end of the show. So make sure you listen to the whole show. If you did submit some questions to find out the answers, you've got to listen to 1 hour of this bullshit. So thanks for joining us. Like, share, subscribe.
It's not working, Jonesy.
They don't want to be locked into a house or an apartment.
Got to follow the social distancing rule.
And some nuff dicks were getting tested, then going in and doing a shop.
What was that? COVID. I had it.
Detective so, George Bennett.
Yeah, he's a ballin. Absolutely.
George, don't say hello to you. Like,
I don't know. I'm actually genuinely embarrassed.
I broke my back.
A vertebrae or a portion?
Spinal.
Wait, Josie, just do that. Do that thing where you just put Bill's talking. Let me see. I can hear him first.
The old intro, we just threw stones at Jonesy before we started the show. George and I both said, mate, we've got to change the intro. It's too long. George doesn't like
it. I said I'm not doing it.
I took it as a personal attack, to be honest. I thought I was coming from all angles. I said, shit, too long. You don't know what you're fucking doing. Jesus.
So you decided to play the old
one. Said it.
So you decided to play the old one, but next week we'll have a new one. Or when I say next week, I mean... Whenever we do another show, because we're unorganized. But hey, we've got George back today.
Hey, welcome back, George.
Boys are back in town.
Trevor will be here. I like how you just said, Jonesy. We'll have a new intro next time. No worries. Like, you're not going to make one. I'm not going to make one. Jonesy's going to make it.
Yeah.
He's the whipping boy.
Yeah. I just told me and George both just had 15 minutes of technical difficulties, so we haven't got the ability to create or edit anything, let alone even get on the show half the time with our software. But we're here and we're all here.
You just stick to what you're good at, and that is barking orders. And I'll just do as I'm told. I'll trim it up. Yes, sir. And as long as I keep you two, well, you're never going to be fully happy, but as long as I keep you above that. Yeah, you're all right. How are you going, George?
No, I'm not happy.
Yeah. Well, if I could get you from a 1 to a 2.5, then I've done my job next time.
Well, you got nothing better to do. You're stuck inside again, aren't you?
Yeah, lockdown. Lockdown 4.0.
Fourth time.
Yeah.
How long for? 3 weeks.
What happened this time? Last time it was the rogue security guard, wasn't it? Was that the rogue security guard taking around out of the ISO patient?
Yeah.
ISO patient.
What happened this time is someone in Adelaide was in a hotel and they said it got through the air vents again. And it just keeps happening, like COVID through the air vents. And then there's rumors.
It's about 6 degrees in Adelaide right now. Why are they wanting aircon?
Well, they need to breathe, so it's pumping probably oxygen into them. But, and so they reckon that there was a problem with people coming off planes and coming into the hotel, and then people that had done their 2 weeks quarantine leaving, and potentially they could have brushed past each other. And that's how this one person got it
on the way out.
Yeah, come back to Melbourne, and then it got out, and now we've got the Indian strain or Delta, what they call it now. And it's I think there's like 60 cases or something. But as soon as soon as it breaks out, like particularly Victoria, we just panic and shut it down. So they're going to try it.
Quite a lot, though, eh?
Nowhere in the world it's had Indian variant has been able to knock it down to zero. So they're against twice as infectious or whatever. But yeah, grim start to the show, boys.
Speaking of concerning variants, I was going to say, did you see the latest thing, the next pandemic on the horizon, the H1N1 bird flu has gone to humans? And I just I looked at that and I just went, fuck, here we go.
Yeah, but China said it's okay, so we're fine. They said, don't be alarmed. We're on top of it. It's not going to get out. So I trust that's good news. So we'll be fine. Yeah, it's not going to get out. It won't. It can't.
I'm getting the vaccine on Saturday, Jonesy.
Oh, yeah?
First round, yeah.
Which one are you getting? Pfizer?
AstraZeneca, I think. I don't actually
know. You're a line jumper, eh? There's vulnerable people in need and you've jumped the line.
No, they've done them.
Yeah, but you've already had COVID too. Can't you just go, I've had COVID, I'm fine.
Don't know. I'll ask them.
Well, AstraZeneca, that's the one that's given people under 50 blood clots.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like, it's not really, is it? It's not really giving it to you. It's
not. No. It's slip. They reckon it's like, yeah, it's like winning Tats Lotto in a negative way.
It's one in 100,000 or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's slip. You'll be fine, mate. Enjoy the jab.
That's it.
So what have you been up to, Jonesy? Stuck inside, doing nothing?
Mate, rabbit holes. I'm back down YouTube rabbit holes. I think I sent you boys a video last night that I wouldn't advise watching it, 1:30 in the morning. You know those disturbing 911 calls? And this was like this guy's top five. And, yeah, it was horrific. Like, it's pretty...
What I'm just concerned about the link that you got to, like the you know what I mean? How you ended up at that wormhole? Like, what did that start at?
Well,
the starting video in the destination there?
Okay, so the starting video, and this is a phenomenon. Like, particularly Aussie and Kiwi males can relate to this. There's nothing better than on a Saturday morning, the smell of two-stroke. You look at your lawn, it's overgrown. You go, right, time to roll the sleeves up. Let's get the Victor out. Let's get this lawn back on track. There's blokes in America and a guy in Australia, and what they're doing is they're going around and mowing abandoned lawns or elderly people that can't do it. They're doing their lawns for free and videoing it. So you sit back. I don't know why. You sit back, you go, shit, that lawn needs a good cut. And he just gets his GoPro out and just starts hacking away. And, oh, mate, I'm
and you're watching videos of this.
Yeah, I'm into it. I love it.
Makes good TV. I was hearing last night about this show called Gogglebox. And basically what it is it's just a TV show in UK where they watch you watch someone else.
Yeah, this guy, he's Blade Mate Lawn Care, and he says at the start, hey, listeners, thanks for joining my Patreon account, and, you know, you've enabled me to do some lawns for free, and then he picks this one, and it's a horrific
lawn. You got to be watching on YouTube if Jones is making any sense to you right now and you're not watching this on YouTube, you won't be watching a video along with us.
Yeah, so he's basically hacking away at this, you know, lawn that's got about 4 foot out of control. And then when you watch it, you go, mate, you've killed it. Like, that lawn's all brown and shit. And then he goes and explains, you know, hey, listeners, you know, the reason why it's all this is...
Have the deck high, low. If the cooch is long, it always struggles like that. And you've got to go over it several times. Like I said, it's a devil grass to mow when it's long, but it's absolutely beautiful when maintained. So as for this browning, look there, that's, what's that, 5 inches, thereabouts? It's not cut that short. I'm cutting it as tall as I can.
Jesus, all right, we're reaching new lows. We're watching videos of guys cutting grass.
But the job at the end, look at that, George. He's come up a good treat. That's brilliant.
You know what? I found myself like weirdly like intrigued, like mesmerized by that.
Yeah. Like... I know. Like, the end, you're like, mate, that is a beautiful looking lawn for what it was. And then at the very end, he does a before and after. So, you know, what more do you want than that? That is just brilliant YouTube.
Why don't we just show that for 20 minutes? And it's just, that can be our show today. Enjoy the show, guys. Enjoy this man mowing lawns. All the best. See you in 20.
Yeah, but what a job.
I'll try to get some sleep in. it's crazy, like this YouTube thing. I had a teammate that he slept. He's not my teammate anymore, but he's been a teammate for a long time. And the whole time I was teammates with him, he basically slept like maybe 3 or 4 hours a night. So you'd go to bed like whatever, 11 o'clock in a race in your room with him. You're like, all right, night, mate. You wake up at 2 in the morning, go take a piss, and you look at him and he's still just like this. Like, staring at his phone just with us, with YouTube, YouTube, YouTube. He never once took a book to a race, never took a laptop to watch a TV series, only YouTube. And we were doing our screen times. Like, after a couple of days, this was in like Tarapola one year, I was like, Mate, I've never seen someone do this. What's your screen time? He did 13 hours on his phone. Because he would just go from like, yeah, and he would just have like battery, permanently like a power bank with him, and then just watch YouTube, and it would just feed him algorithms. And I did the same thing like you were doing. You started watching lawns, and you ended up hearing phone calls about apes murdering people.
Yeah, and that was the same thing. That was a bad one. That ape call was real bad.
Speaking of books, yeah, George, what did you read through the Giro? You read a book throughout the Giro or not? Just the Gary Boldy.
No, I read a book, and it was not the right vibe for the Giro. Actually, I read David Attenborough's new book, and I tell you what, it's good in some ways. It basically makes you realize that nothing you're doing matters because the planet's about to die anyway. If we don't, the way we're heading, everything, it's hard to feel. In one way, it was good to think like, okay, this bike race doesn't matter that much. This is going horribly wrong, but it doesn't really matter because the only things that matters actually is if this planet is going to get 3 degrees warmer past the point of no return, and then we are absolutely fucked. So that was good in that way, but it was also not like the whole like feel good, like, oh, can't wait to get into my book kind of thing. You know,
is that why you finished that stage with the musette bag still around your neck? Because you're like,
save the planet.
If David Attenborough saw me throw this, he wouldn't be happy.
Do you know what that was? So we go out the pass of Jow, and it's, I don't know, not more than 1 or 2 degrees on the top, raining, fucking cold. And I've been dropped pretty much like every other day. It was cold. Got hooped. And then get to the top, and I grabbed a bag, and I was like, oh, sweet, rain jacket. I opened it, and it was like a short sleeve vest and a long sleeve undershirt. And I was like, we've got 10K to go. I'm not going to stop on the side of the road, take all my clothes off in 1 degree in rain and put an undershirt on for like a 10, 15K downhill. So I just like put the musette on, and I was quite far out the hoop that I thought like, oh, it won't be on TV. Like they'll turn the TV coverage off by the time I get there. But I wasn't quite far enough out there. I think I was still like, I don't know, 14th or something on the stage. So the TV camera was still on.
Your definition about the hoop is completely different to mine.
Yeah, 14. I was way out the ass.
Well, I wasn't racing. I was just trying to get to the finish, you know. And the worst thing about it wasn't the musette. It was just the angle of my helmet, because I'd put the musette bag over my head, and then so I rode with the finish line with like the, you know, the classic under 19, like helmet going one way, glasses going the other.
So, and did you do the old school newspaper stuff down the guts? Because it looked like you were carrying a bit.
That was just information. That was just damage. Oh, you mean the things I was carrying? Oh, that was just my demons from.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was going to say, how was the Giro? You're obviously pretty happy with how it went.
Yeah, I loved it. Loved every minute of it. Shit, it was a good race. No, I didn't really like the Giro. It was weird. I loved it, and I loved the first three stages. They were good. And then, do you know what annoyed me about the Giro? Now that we're talking about cycling, we probably should touch on cycling, being a cycling podcast. Is that what annoyed me about it? Is I, you know, like, firstly, we were particularly unlucky that there was like, I don't know, 5 really bad weather days, and they were always on the mountain stages. Not one of the like easy sprint stages was bad weather. They were always like 25 degrees, beautiful. But like, every time I go to the mountains, it'd just be freezing cold and shit. But what was frustrating is like, you know, like being in New Zealand or Australia, you always want to be like the, oh, it doesn't matter if it's raining. Like you want to be the tough guy that just can handle all conditions. So even if you like G'd up for it, and you're not like sitting in the bus going, oh, it's raining, I don't want to race today. If you're still like, yeah, I don't care about the rain or the stuff, doesn't matter. Like, you don't get to decide that. Like, if you care about the rain or not, like, it's at a cellular level. So you go out, you're all G'd up, like trying to be like the tough man of all conditions. And then when you're not, like, I just found out that I was the worst possible guy in the race at it. And you just felt like you'd limp in and you'd be like, oh, what happened? You'd be like, oh, I got cold. And it was like 6 degrees and rain. It's like, everybody got cold. What are you talking about? Like, It was cold. Of course you got cold. You just went 50K down a hill and it was 3 degrees at the top and maybe 8 degrees at the bottom, and it was torrential rain. Like, of course everyone got cold. Why did you lose 7 minutes and why did they not? And it's just I don't know. It's an unanswerable question.
Mm. We were talking about that yesterday on the bike. George and I were talking about the cold there at the Giro, and I referenced stage 16 actually specifically, which was I think it was stage 16, wasn't it? That was Passagel.
That was Giro. Yeah.
And like on that day particularly, there was guys like guys from my team like Michael Hepburn, Chris Jorgensen. They all had storming days, you know. They all climbed really well. They all climbed with, there was like, you know, 40, 50 guys left when these guys that normally would be dropped with, you know, with much, much bigger group still there. But because it was so cold and those guys are considerably bigger than like George or the GC guys, they can handle it a little bit better. They're a little bit more robust. So it is true that, like, man, when it's so cold at that, when you're a GC guy, you're considerably smaller than those sort of guys. And also, like, you can't really do anything about it. Like, if you're not built that way, if you're not genetically built, like if you're a Scandinavian, those guys are built, they've all got a little bit of, you know, they're a bit bigger guys, they're all built because they're born in bloody Arctic conditions. Genetically, they're hardwired to be able to handle those conditions a little bit better than what a lot of other people are. So
speaking of Scandos, on that day, I was riding along and I had like maybe 4 or 5 jackets on. It was just so cold, like gabbers with rain jackets, with like thermal jackets, undershirts, everything. And we're riding along going up this hill and I was still freezing. And I looked across at the guy that ended up riding GC for us, Tobias Foss, and he had a t-shirt on, just had shorts, just had shorts and knicks. And I was like, surely you're taking the piss. Surely you're just trying to get in our heads.
Can't they give you like hot tea and things like that as well? Like, what are some of the other things that they do?
Bro, that's like pissing on a house fire.
Yeah.
Like you've got hypothermia. Oh, here's a hot tea. Oh, sweet. All good now. Oh, sweet.
You might put your head over a tub of Vicks.
You might boil water with a towel. You might put the doormat out, but the house burns down still.
Yeah, exactly.
But haven't riders in the past gone, I'm going to go in with an extra kilo? Obviously, that's shit carrying it up the climb, but they almost allow themselves a bit of a layer.
Yeah, but like, yeah. Yeah, they have. Whose ringtone is that?
Sorry. I need to stop that. Sorry.
Probably less so in grand tours, though. Like, maybe in the classics, people are less concerned about their weight for the spring classics, you know? Like, if you're a classics rider, typically are bigger guys anyway, so let's say they're 80 kilos normally throughout the season. If they're 81, 82 for the classics, there's not like a real stress to shred that before the classics start, because you know that the weather's going to be cold. You also know that it's not mountains, so you can get away with it a bit more. Grand Tours is such a tricky, fine line, because it goes for everybody in the Grand Tour, whether you're a GC guy or an 80-kilo guy. If you're 80 kilos but you can be 79 for a Grand Tour, you're already that much better off. You can already go a little bit further in all the stages. You already get a little less fatigue throughout the race. If you're a GC guy, obviously, you can go up the climbs a little bit quicker, which is good to aid your
And you'd be better just to put another jacket on, right?
Yeah.
You know, you'd be so better to go, all right, I'll be a kilo lighter and wear 2 jackets.
And it's a real fine line, because you don't know what the weather's going to be. So then you go there, like, you go, all right, I'm going to go to the Giro. I want to win the Giro, and I'm going to go there 1 or 2 kilos heavier so that I'm ready for the cold weather. Then you get there and it's fucking 25 degrees every day and you can't climb fast. It's like,
I can't accept this. I can't accept this is like, there's no solution. There's got to be an invention that makes you warmer.
I busted out a few tricks, right? I after 4 days, the first 4 really cold days, and I was like, this is just, and I was just getting hooped. Like one day, the stage 6, when I lost 7 minutes, I was going as hard as I could to the finish, and I couldn't even ride a pace that I would do a recovery ride at. Like, I was shaking, like I was going to crash, like, because my bike was oscillating from the shivering, and my bike was just like doing the big shakes. Like, I can't even keep the bike upright. Couldn't move my hands, couldn't change gears, and I was just like, and after that stage, I was like, right, there's got to be a better way. So on stage 16, I got before the start, I got onto the bus and it was like horrific weather at the start line, and we're going up to like 2,500 meters, and we were at 5 meters high, and it was already freezing cold and rain. So I got a whole tub of heat cream and then chamois cream, and just coated my whole body in a layer of fat. So I tried to like actually give myself another like half a kilo of fat just externally, put it all over me, but I put the heat cream on first. And then we started the, like, I was sitting in the bus, and then they're like, okay, start time was meant to be 11 o'clock. And so I coated everything in heat cream, whole body, legs, everything, had leg warmers on over top, and it starts getting hotter and hotter. And then we get a message, we're sitting there at like 10:45, and they're like, oh, the stage has been changed, and now the start time's 11:45. And I was just going, oh, fuck. So I just started heating up, and I just started like burning up, and I was just sitting in the bus just like, like in pain, like, ah, this heat cream, and my skin was just coming up in like big rashes and shit. And I was just like having to go stand outside in the cold, try cool off. But then after like an hour of rain, that all washes off anyway, and then I still got cold.
Well, that's what those swimmers do when they do like the English Channel. They just layer themselves in like, it looks like fat.
Lard.
Yeah.
The other thing that was quite cool that some guys had is these like heat pads where you like crack them,
yeah,
and then there's a chemical reaction. So they were like, I saw some guys had them like stuffed all down their shorts and in their gloves and stuff. It's just like these heat pads.
Yeah, I would have been loading up on those, snapping those, throwing down the front, shoving up your crack.
I honestly didn't really consider that. Like, I was like, oh yeah, the gear will be bad. It might be bad better days, but I didn't really consider it to be like a defining factor of the race, like before I went there. And we talked about like, oh, what's all the traps of the Giro, and we talked about like, oh, the gravel stage and like this and the crosswinds and all this shit before we went. We never talked about the fact that it was going to be real cold, and like, you never really like, it's the same with the heat, you know. You don't really like, you always look back through like rose tinted glasses on like cold days. Oh, it wasn't that bad, you know, I got through, it was in the, had a shower. Same with the heat, you're like, oh, I mean, it was warm, but you don't actually you forget pretty quickly like how horrific it is, like when you like the actual act of doing it, like, you know, like you always look to optimism, like, oh man, that was back then, I'll be good in the cold now, but nothing's changed, but for some reason I'll be good in the cold
at all. But also it's like, you know, there's people out there on the couch like, you know, that think, oh well, that's not an excuse to get cold. Well, actually it is, like, and yeah, like that. It's not an excuse. It's a reason. And like, you can do you can do everything you possibly can do that is every opportunity that's given to us. Good clothing, fucking heat packs if you want to do it, heat cream on your body, all that shit. It's not like you haven't taken every single step possible to try and stay warm. It's not like you refuse to wear a jacket. Like, you still put everything on, and then you're in the hands of your genes or whatever. If genetics, you get cold, you get cold, you go, oh well, I'm cold. There's nothing more I can do. Like, and people go, yeah,
oh well, 2022.
Why don't you put more clothes on? Yeah. Oh, fuck. Sorry. Forgot about that. Yeah. Good point. You fucking morons. Of course,
oh,
I did that.
I knew there was something, like, I could do. Put a jacket on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. After that, GB, like, we're watching from afar, and I could only imagine, like, you often talk about trying to eliminate, there's about a dozen devils on your shoulder at any one time. Were those devils just giving you that fucking anger where you're like, that's it, I'm gonna fucking get in a break, I'm gonna fucking smash this? And to your credit, every time you did go on a break, you were a riding billboard for the podcast. Like, we were getting mentions on Eurosport, SBS. I'm going, oh mate, this is great. It was great for us.
I'd say it was the most emotional race of my career. Like, it was like, for me, it was the biggest opportunity I ever had. And then already on stage six, by the time I woke up from, like, I got on the bus, fell asleep for 2 hours on the transfer, I was just dead. And then I got back to the hotel and I was still like, could hardly see. And then I was just like, realized, I was like, oh, this is probably the toughest day of my career ever. And then I was like, okay, I had a good talk with people, like, all right, okay, you know, there's still opportunities and this and that. And then on the Zonkalon stage, that was when I was like, right, got on the break. Eduardo Fenya was just insanely strong, like pulling like a mad dog. And in my head, all we had to do was beat the peloton, and then it was uphill finish. And I was like, yeah, I should win this, you know, like from you know, I'm the only GC guy in the break. And the main, my main thing was just like full gas, right? This is it. And just invested fully in trying to beat the peloton so we'd arrive in front of the thing. And basically after 150K of a block headwind and pulling absolutely full gas, I started realizing like, oh, I'm actually pretty cooked. And then we got to the bottom and then everyone just took off. And me and Palka, who I was like mainly marking, you know, he was the other sort of climber in the race. We both got shelled. And Fortunato won us. And yeah, guys, the breakaway you realize is like a completely different sport to climbing from the peloton, because it's like, it's not about who's a good climber. It's about who's still got something left after 6 hours of going absolutely full gas.
So that was a bit of a breakaway. I was once in a breakaway in a mountain stage in the Vuelta that went to the line. And there was 20 of us in the break. And I was there with, I would have been by far that probably 15 kilos heavier than the next biggest guy in the break. And probably even worse climber than that. And I was in there and I thought to myself, how the fuck am I going to win this stage? So what I did was I attacked on the climb with the second to last climb, like 40K to go. And
was this on the Zonk, on the Angaroo?
No, this was another day. It was a pretty hard climb though. And I attacked on the second last climb and I thought, you know, this is it. This is my moment of glory. I'm going to ride away 40K in a mountain stage and I'm going to win. I got caught 2K up that climb, got piped and then got caught by the peloton before we even got to the last climb. So I feel your pain. I feel your pain.
But when I'm fascinated when you're in the break though, and do you've got time to think about scenarios. How much does your brain rattle with, oh shit, if it goes to this scenario, I've got to think of this, or can you just block that out?
No, I went full tunnel vision and just went because we had Eduardo with us, we were just like his job. It was so random. So the plan on the bus was like, okay, we're going to try and get a big guy and George in the break. And then we're like, yeah, but that's never going to work. It's going to be a fight for, you know, two hours. And it was a fight for 2 hours, but it somehow worked out that me and Eduardo were in the break of 10 guys. So the whole time I was like, ah, yeah, this is perfect. This is it. We just got to go full gas now and everyone's going full gas. But I didn't really realize at the time that not everyone was going full gas. Like me, Eduardo, Balka and his teammate were going full gas because we were like, yeah, we all thought we were going to, you know, we thought it was a battle of me and Balka, and their teammates both thought the same. And so we all went for, like, you know, us four were going absolutely apeshit, like trying to get as much of a gap because the peloton was trying to bring us back. So it wasn't like, oh, they've given it to us, you guys are going to win. We had to really like take every second. And I think what you're talking about, like thinking about scenarios in this, would have done me good, because in the end I didn't do that. I just went like every turn time check, just living from time check to time check. It'd be like 8 minutes and be like 8 minutes 10, you're like, yeah, that's it boys, like trying to cheer everyone up, going through, and you realize that the other guys probably weren't doing that. They were probably sitting on going, these fucking idiots, like going hundies, like how are they going to go hard up the last climb? And then in the end it turns out we couldn't.
Well, you got bloody close. What was the stage when we end up running third on the stage, but what was that one?
Oh, that was stage four. No, stage, oh, I don't know, man. Nine, something like that. 10, 4, 6. Oh, that was a balls of a stage, though.
Yeah, well, take us through that one. That was a cracker.
It's a bit of drama at the end, wasn't it?
It was good to watch, because me and Bules were doing this thing where, you know, we'd ring and just talk to each other for the last sort of 20K or whatever. We were fucking G. And then another stage, we got the wean dog on and there was a three-way chat. Yeah, that was a bit messy at times, because then you're having a conversation, the other guy's watching it. Yeah, it just wasn't the same
dynamic. Was wean dog in the Shimano car?
Yeah, I think so. You ask him, you go, what are you up to, mate? He goes, just do a couple of races, you know. It's pretty laid back. I can have some beers. Don't have to race. It's fucking great. He loves
it. You can't have beers in the service car, bro. Like,
yeah, I know.
trying to put the hanging out front wheel on the back of some guy's bike.
Oh, yeah. You're like Kramer at a bike race.
He'll be like, oh, fucking disc brakes. He'll be like, wind dog, it's not disc brakes. That's the front wheel, mate. You're trying to put that in the back.
Yeah. Ah! You'll be right. Have a beer and bag.
Anyway, it's – oh, carry on.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's it.
Well, we're proud of you, mate.
Oh, thanks. It was good to have well, to be honest, I deleted all social media throughout the race, so I didn't actually see anything that happened in the rest of the world. As soon as the first
– there wasn't a match. COVID, they're talking about COVID cases and just
people mowing lawns and shit.
People mowing lawns and so what else and happened? I don't know. The IPL players got out of India.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I know. I did see that. Speaking of IPL, well, not IPL, but cricket, are you guys watching, have you guys been watching the England Kiwi Test?
Yeah, I have been.
Yeah, it's been good, eh?
Who's that guy who made the ton on debut?
Conway. He made a double ton.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah, 200, got run out. He scored 200, got run out next ball.
Yeah. Shit, he might be the next Chris Keynes.
I hope not. He'll be in jail. I know, he's not in jail. No, I've been watching it. And I'll tell you what else I also watched was the Friends reunion the other night.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen it, Jamie?
Talk about rabbit holes, mate. Yeah, I watched it. I was never like a massive Friends sort of fan. Like, there's some people that just know every ep. I'm like that with Seinfeld and old school Simpsons. But when I watched it, I was thinking, oh, yeah, how's this going to go? And then when all the casts come in, you're like, oh, yeah, Aniston still looks in pretty good nick. And then you're going, Courtney Cox, what? Geez, she's had some work. And then Lisa Kudrow, you're like, no, she's aged gracefully. And then Matt LeBlanc comes in. Oh, yeah, no, he's up and about. And his personality really come out. But then, obviously, and the big talking point is Matthew Perry comes in. Mm-hmm. And they said that he had like
Chandler.
Chandler. Matthew he had like an emergency dental surgery or something that day, and he wasn't his best. And he had like the porcelain white fangs and – yeah, he had bloody health issues. I think he had a stroke in the year or something a couple of years ago. And
was he not just massively high on Valium?
I think he'd given a bit of the drugs a shake as well. So that obviously cooked his biscuit a bit. But it was like the elephant in the room because everyone was up and about and they're all talking and that. And he's sort of sitting there. And then there was one. Did you see that bit, Bills, when they're talking about, oh, do you guys still keep in touch? Because James Corden was hosting, and then they were like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he goes, no, no one calls me. He's like, you're waiting for the producer to go, look, can we reshoot that again? Can you just make out that you're all mates or whatever? He's like, no.
Yeah, just give it something, Chandler. Just give it a bit of something, you know? Like,
yeah, I know. It just talk about what you were saying before. It's like pissing on a bushfire. Like,
well, do you remember? They circled around Chandler, Matthew Perry, a fair bit with every question, eh? They were like, probably best we don't talk to this guy too much. But he was still pretty funny. When he did get his chance to say something, like, it was normally like a half slurred, blurted out quote, but it was pretty funny most of the time. He's a funny man. But Matt LeBlanc, man, that guy,
good.
You know how people say to you, if you could have four famous people to come for dinner, dead or alive, or whatever, you know, and people be like, oh, I'd have Mahatma Gandhi and fucking whoever else. I reckon I'd have him as one of them. Like, what a lovable chap.
Well,
yeah, but that, I mean, just, you could have dinner with him. That, you know, you could have dinner with him. So I wouldn't waste one of my four on some guy. Yeah, you could probably do it, you know what I mean? But if you only get four people to go to dinner with, you're not going to bring Joey in, are you?
Yeah. I'd have Darwin, Jesus Christ, for starters. That'd be good.
That'd be a good combo. Like, they'd be a good combo. Which one is right?
Yeah. And then I'd have, like,
Dave Chappelle.
No, I wouldn't have Dave Chappelle. I'd definitely have Matt LeBlanc, though.
I'd just set up some real awkward conversations, as many as I could, you know. So you'd have you'd have the Pope, and you'd have, you know, you'd have
Edinburgh,
yeah, or basically,
your old man, like maybe your dad.
Yeah, that's what I'd have. I'd basically take my dad
and the Pope,
and the Pope, and then just let them go at it and see what happens. I also think, like, it wouldn't hurt to have Hitler there and be like, yeah, what were you thinking? You know, just out of curiosity, just unpick his brain and be like, mate,
yeah,
what
but
was going on?
You couldn't get through to him. It caused a punch on. Yeah. He'd start too attacking much, you. He'd be banging
too much
tables.
Mess with Hitler.
And it'd just ruin the dinner. You wouldn't be able to get through your mains.
Yeah.
He's pissed Hitler off. Like, you're trying to cut your bloody
and everyone's just quiet, just sitting there, and he's just giving a speech like the Nuremberg.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, with the back to the special and how you're pumping LeBlanc's ties up, it's funny when they build up things like this, all the people come out of the woodwork, like family members that they're pissed off, and, you know, there's exclusive. Matt LeBlanc's old man hasn't spoken to him for 10 years or something, and it was over the sale of a car. Like, he said, yeah, no, he gave me this car and I sold it and he wanted the money and there was a dispute over the money or whatever. And, yeah, he hasn't spoken to me since. And they always sell it like it's black and white, he's a asshole or whatever. But I was like, mate, there's got to be more to that story with the car. Like, I reckon LeBlanc said, hey, Pops, you know, that car I gave you know, what are you doing with it? He goes, oh, no, I'll sell it. I'll give you the money. And he probably doesn't need the money, but there must have been friction before that. Like, he would have been leeching off him.
You don't
for
years. You don't fall out with your dad if you're a multimillionaire about a car, do you?
Nah. There's obviously
did Friends age well. Did Friends, like, you know how every other series has kind of been cancelled? They look back through the lens of 21 and they go, there's some slurs in there or whatever. Friends seems to like have dodged. There's not really like any sexual assault scandals or anything. Like, everything else is crumbling behind us. But like, Friends is done right, isn't it?
Even the content of the show, like, obviously now in 2021, where you can't say boo to a goose without getting in trouble, you know, like the fine line of where you can tread these days, which rightly so in a lot of cases. But, like, you know, the show's from 17 years ago, it ended. There was bound to have been something in there, like, whether it be like a, you know, like an off the cuff, like jovial racial remark or something that wouldn't fly now. But, There wasn't really any of that, because it's still widely accepted around the world and it's still on millions of streaming services and it's still watched worldwide. Like, they kind of did it quite well, I think, because it was so family oriented. It was a sitcom that was like, they went to a cafe, they didn't go to a pub, you know, they were never drunk. They were like, it wasn't like one of those shows where, for example, Two and a Half Men or something, where he's like with hookers and prostitutes and like things like that, you know, where people are like, oh, you can't show the kids that. Friends has kind of like always been a little bit more family orientated, so they still get away with it now. But I love Friends. I reckon it's a great show.
You want to know an interesting stat?
Oh, yeah. Go on.
So Seinfeld held the record for making more money after selling the rights after the original series aired. And I reckon Friends would have to be up there, because the deal they did with HBO Max was worth $400 million to get the rights to air the reruns. And when your show's making that sort of bank, I mean, you're not buying reruns of Kingswood Country or any of the old stuff back in the Aussie early 80s. Like, that's huge. That's massive. Oh,
for sure, Friends is bigger than Seinfeld now. For sure. Has to be.
Yeah.
Speaking of getting like historically, like looking back through the lens, did you see Ollie Robinson's tweets that came up on his test debut? The English cricketer.
No.
He first day, like test debut at Lord's, he's out bowling, he's out playing, so they were batting first, and comes back in and he had no idea what was going on, because he's out playing cricket at Lord's. He comes back into at like a dinner break or something, and the media guy's like, mate, there's been a huge fuck up. And they like went back to his Twitter profile and found like these tweets from like eight or 9 years ago or something. And he's obviously an absolute mong, this guy, or he was, at least. You got to give him the opportunity. But they've just dragged up these tweets from his like. They must have known about these tweets. They must have had them ready for months. You know, it's not that someone suddenly trolled back 8 years to his Twitter profile and found these tweets on the day of his debut. So someone's waited for him to debut, resurfaced everything and gone, look what this guy was saying 8 years ago. So he's just come in from like the best day of his life and gone, this is suddenly the worst day of my life.
What did he say? What did he do?
I was tweeting. Tweeting.
Racist stuff.
Yeah, racist.
Misogynistic, racist stuff.
Yep, both. Actually, both. It's a good mix. He's done a real good mix.
Real cocktail.
He's really gone across the spectrum. He's gone after Asian, Muslim, woman, and yeah. Who's Bex Dixon? Just in particular.
Don't know.
Okay. Yeah. So he's had a bit of a shocker there.
The only way he could have got out of that is said, listen, mate, I've been hacked and I found out who it was. It's Tika Tiwari.
I wonder how Tika's dealing with the I don't follow Tika on Twitter anymore. I wonder how he's dealing with the current cryptocurrency slump around the world.
Oh, Tika's been through this crash before. You know, it's always about buying in the dips. So yep. I reckon he's probably telling everyone, look, it's just a dip. It's going to bounce back. Don't worry about China trying to regulate it and bang Bitcoin. Nah, we're good. We're good. My projections have got us 40% by the end of the year. Stick with me.
But I had two teammates that bought Bitcoin at the start of the Giro, which was they thought was the dip. That was the start of the dip. And every day it just got worse and worse and worse. And by the end of the Giro, they had nothing.
Do you know what I love about investing, like investors, like investment analysts and investment advisors, whether it be like cryptocurrencies or the share market? Like I watched a show called The Halftime Report it's an American show on the stock market. And like whenever there's a dip or whenever there's like a crash or whenever there's like a run of negative downturn in the markets, they always go, yeah, I'm long in that stock. I'm long. Stay long. Of course you're fucking long because it's less than what you bought it at. So you're not going to be short on it. You're like, nah, I'm long. I always said I'll be long in the stock. Well, of course you are.
They've always got a way to turn it into a positive. Like, oh, this is great. The stock's crashing. This is great. This is a good time to buy, guys. Like, even though the room's on fire, they're going, no, this is awesome. Let's just buy some more.
Especially in the crypto market. Like, it's a good time to buy, guys. Please buy.
The crypto does your head in because they've got all these sayings for it. They've gone, oh, it's a cup and handle formation of the graph there. It's a Fibonacci scale here. And they're just basically just drawing lines. And you're watching it going, oh, shit. It's time to go. Let's go. I'm all in. And then same thing again.
This is what they call it's like the stock market last year after the crash and March. It's like, yeah, no, we're looking at a Y-shaped recovery. So, you know, it's going to hit the bottom. It's going to go back up. And then a couple months later, it's like, no, this is what we call a W-shaped recovery because it's gone back down again.
But they always start by saying, this is not financial advice. Do your own research. And then they go straight in like, buy, buy, buy. Like, you know, what are you going to do?
Please buy. Please.
But if anyone watching or listening, and this is not financial advice, I'll give you one. If you want to have a little on crypto, it's called Zilliqa, ZIL, and they're stepping into the NFT market. They've got 10 massive names with a combined social following of like 220 mil in soccer, and they're doing some big things. They've got an Ethereum Zilliqa bridge. Buy, buy, buy.
It's bad for the
Zilliqa, ZIL.
Bitcoin.
No.
Bitcoin is bad for the environment.
Watch it. It'll go. They're predicting a dollar at the end of the year, and it's currently at about, I don't know, 18 cents. So, Maybe that's a new segment. Zilliqa update.
Should we go Legend or Bellend? Should we do Legend or Bellend on Bitcoin? Yeah.
Should we do it on Bitcoin or should we do it on Friends?
Oh, two good options. What about friends that recommend you to buy Bitcoin? I reckon that's a better thing. Friends that recommend you to buy Bitcoin.
I'm not saying buy Bitcoin. I don't.
Oh, it sounds like you're saying buy Bitcoin.
No, not Bitcoin. Zilliqa. I told you. ZIL.
I'm not saying Legend or Balian. When I say friends, I don't mean the show Friends. I mean our friends. Our friends in general. Are they legends or Balians? Are friends worth it? Is it worth having friends? Are they legends or are they Balians? Or should we just do friends?
Net average. On net average, have friends got you in more trouble than they've got you out of? It's basically what it boils down to. Have they caused you more trouble than they've got? If you just did what's the John Grish Into the Wild? Mm-hmm. If you know where the guy just goes and walks into a bus, and
I don't think it's John Grisham. Isn't he like a thriller writer? Oh.
Is he the one who did Hunt for the Red October or whatever?
No, he wrote who wrote Everest?
John
Krakauer.
Krakauer, yeah.
Did he write
John Krakauer?
Yeah, no idea.
John Krakauer wrote Everest. I don't know what else he wrote.
Anyway, he was a National Geographic writer. Anyway,
yeah,
friends. John Grisham. Better off without him. John Grisham, original ballad.
I think it depends on your personality. If you want to be a loner, well, you're going to go, no, piss him off. But like if you're a bit of an extrovert and you need people to go down to the Irish or you need to talk shit or bounce stuff off, geez,
you can drink solo at the Irish.
Yeah, but I mean, have you seen those guys? Have you seen those guys?
With that was like, me 2 nights ago.
Stink hot? Yeah, well, there you go. That's it. I don't want to step into that. I don't want to be the devil on the shoulder drinking G&Ts.
I was telling Jules the other day, I was like, I went down to the square for a couple of beers and this. I was telling a story to my dad. I was like, and then part of the day, I was running into a series of events of what happened. I was like, so what happened? It started as I went down the square for a couple of beers. And who you go to square with? And I went, solo. I just went down. And he goes, you went for the solo beer. The solo beer is like a distinct thing. Like, you went for that. Like everyone's done it at a point. Like, you're that state of mind where you went for the solo beer at the square.
No, but the reason I said that was because I have always done it. I often do it. And like for no other reason than like I don't mind it. I have absolutely no issue of going to to a cafe and having a coffee by myself or going to the pub and having a beer by myself. I have no issue with it. And I don't think it is an issue. I think it's just, what's wrong with it? And then but people will always judge me. Like I've got, speaking of friends, some friends who go, I'd never do that. That's a bit weird. It's not fucking weird. What's wrong with that? Like I'm sitting in my lounge having a beer watching cricket. Why don't I go and sit at the pub and have a beer and watch cricket and talk to the bartender? I don't know, whatever. Like it's nothing. I don't feel like anything's wrong with it. But I always been judged for it. So when you said it, I was like, I basically just coined you as one of those guys that's judged me for it before. So I thought I'd throw some stones at you. But then I realized you don't judge me for that stuff. You judge me for everything else. But no, I don't have a problem with it. Good on you. Well done.
Oh, well, there you go. Great example of a friend being a bellend. So,
well, I think if you have two or three beers, that's all right. But if you have a full-on session solo, when mates are available, I think that's when you start borderline.
That's when your mates are sitting at the bar across the square and you go,
Now, the issue is if you message your friends and go, hey, you guys want to go grab a quick beer or something, and then everyone says, or everyone's unavailable for whatever reason, and you go, I'll just go down anyway and have a couple of beers. That's fine.
And they're all having beers.
But the reverse of that is if they message you and go, hey, mate, we're going to go out for a couple of beers. Are you keen? You go, nah, I'm not keen. But then you go to another pub by yourself. That's avoidance. That's avoidance. And that's an issue.
Yeah, that's danger zone.
There's a deeper problem there.
Sure. So it's the quantity that's the issue and the situation.
Yeah, okay.
It's the context. It's the context.
Yeah. Yeah,
like
I'll give friends a tick.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I'll give friends a tick as well. Friends the show and friends in general.
That's legend. Two friends, one Scotty, no friends.
I'll go on. Right. Give him a tick.
All right, we're three ticks. So last week we said we were going to do a new segment. We were going to answer fan questions. So to send them through.
They're not fan questions.
Fans, listeners. Sorry, fans is the wrong word. Listeners.
Listeners, or let's say
people that are drinking four stubbies on
sympathy.
Their own.
Yeah, listening. Exactly. Like listening. People that just need background noise to, you know, they're just looking for. I mean, I don't know who's still. We're 50 minutes in. Who's still listening? You know.
It's from people who have seen him at pub by themselves. That's who it's from.
Yes. Yeah.
So the first question, this will be the first question because it's actually already been answered, so we don't have to worry about it. It's from Alexandra Diana Dovzan. And it starts by saying, hi, this isn't really a question. But they were interested to know the story as to why George finished stage 16 with a musette around his shoulder. So thanks for answering that earlier on, George.
They want to know if I rode the Zonkel on twice, like everybody else thought.
Oh, yeah. What happened there?
I rode about 6 meters with the Zonkel on. Someone took a photo and then everyone decided that I rode it twice. Here's the crazy thing about that, right? So it was the day I was talking about when me and Adam went full gas and he just did an amazing job. So I didn't win, obviously. So I saw him coming up and I turned around basically to apologize to him, like, mate, sorry, you put in a lot of hard work. Probably, you know. And just say thanks. And then, so I probably rode up like 1 minute, like 50, enough to talk about it. We were both absolutely fried. So I maybe did like 50 meters. Turn around. Someone took a photo at that moment. It was a nice photo. And then it became this thing that I'd ridden up twice. And because I didn't have social media, I didn't know it had become this thing. Rah, rah, rah. And then Ado told me he started getting messages that he should be disqualified from the race because if I didn't turn around and ride up the whole way and carry him up the Zonkel on, he wouldn't have made the time cap. So, shit like that, hey? Like, how does something spiral from a 1 minute conversation to just you should be out of the race? Anyway, I've derailed the listener comments.
Yeah, but just on that, when I saw the photo and, yeah, it went bananas and, you know, I saw someone retweet it, so I retweeted it and then Keenan retweeted it and said that's the photo of the Giro. And, yeah, I was like, did he really do that, go to the bottom of the climb and go up again? Like, that's fucking crazy. Is that something George would do? I don't know. I'm questioning that.
I could hardly get up there once. I wasn't getting up there twice.
Yeah.
And then when I did check on my media.
Oh, this was a real example of giving credit when credit wasn't due.
Yeah. But then the other thing I kept getting when I did finally go back on Twitter just at the end of the year, I just see, you know, what the actual messages were. So many people were like, you idiot. Why didn't you do it one time fast instead of two times slow?
that's good. That's good for me.
I was like, mate, I did it one time and I did it slow. I did it one time, so I didn't do it two times slow.
So the next question is from Peter Cody, who was sort of the instigator of this whole segment. He actually gave me shit last week because I didn't mention his name. Sorry, Peter. Peter Cody. His question is, it's actually quite a good question. He asked that, are the brothers of successful cyclists like Sagan, Nairo Quintana, Vincenzo Nibali, are their brothers like professional because they're brothers of those guys?
Yes.
They're on the same team as those guys. Or are they actually, so are they riding the coattails of their brothers to be professional cyclists? Or are they actually good enough to be pro bike riders themselves? I would answer it by saying.
Oh, you mean like the Yates brothers?
Yeah, like the Yates
brothers. Oh, that's the exception. Yeah.
Who followed who? I would answer it by saying no, they are actually good enough to be, they are good enough to, they are on the same team as their brothers, but they're actually good enough bike riders. 100% they're good enough.
There's a lot of examples. Also, there's also Viviani, Attilio Viviani, or Attila Attilio Viviani. There's Nibali, there's baby Nibali, there's Van der Poel, his brother David Van der Poel.
Well, I got a story about Sagan's brother. I was at the Tour of California in 2013, right? And this was when they were on for Canada, all those green kits. And I remember seeing this guy at the buffet. You know, at Cali, they just feed you till you bath and the coffee's just syrup and, you know, the caffeine level, like you're looking at the roof at 3 a.m. because you're jacked. And I remember seeing Sagan's brother at the dessert bar and he was like looking real like sheepish and waiting for everyone to disperse. And he sat there and was woofing like cakes and slices and that, and then stepping away, letting people go. He would have had about four or five servings. And then at the very end, got like the fruit and filled his bowl with
fruit. And then walked back to the table with the fruit.
Yeah. And I was chapeau, what a legend.
Yeah. He is an absolute legend. Euro Sagan.
Yeah.
I've got to say, absolute legend, that guy. Yeah. I love him, mate.
He's the man.
Do you know what? The first time I ever met him was at Tour of Utah. And I we were coming racing for this corner. It was going to be crosswinds. And we were racing for this corner. And at a certain point, there was only room for one of us, but we were going for the same spot. So I got a bit aggressive, and I just pushed him off the road, just cut him, boom, took the corner in front of him. He was on the brakes. And then he just rode up next to me in the, we're in the gutter in the crosswinds, and he just rode up in the wind, the hardest part, and just looked at me. And then I looked at him, and he just turned straight into me and just went smack and just smashed me off the road. And I was like, what a fucking legend. Good on you, man. I love that.
I was trying to describe this to my teammates. I was talking about one part in stage four of the Giro where I basically pushed Bernal off the wheel and he just came full back and smashed my handlebars. And I was like, and I loved it because I was in the wrong. I was being the asshole. When someone just calls you out and you can't be an asshole there and just puts you in your place, you kind of I rate that in them. You know what I mean? They've got that fight. And why do you like that? I was like, well, it's same thing as Yuri, you know? You just good on him. He should have done that.
It's just good to see. Yeah, exactly. He did. I was actually fair enough, mate.
You can't argue.
Shit move. And I love the fact that you just were I'm not taking that.
On Yuri, because he's the big example of the biggest superstar of a brother, and he was a good rider. But when I was teammates with him, there was a stage where he was he was just sort of cruising and he was happy, and he kind of for a while thought I am here because of Peter, and then at some point it changed and he went, no, actually I'm a good rider. And then maybe 2 years later, I think he went to Belize Dag de Pana, and he nearly, he was fucking good. He was, what was, did he get third in the end, but he nearly won. I think, were you at that race?
Well, I don't remember. Probably though.
And then he turned into a really good rider.
Yeah,
so
he's
at some
strong.
Point
he's...
he probably just went. Yeah.
Well, I saw Sagan's demands going to the new team. He's taken a posse of about 20 people. 11 people. Is
Where's
it?
He going?
Nah,
mate, you're gonna get on social.
He was rumored to go to Quickstep, and then Lefevre came out last week in an article and said, yes, we were interested in Sagan and we were negotiating with him, but the negotiations have ended because he wants to bring 11 people with him, and we're not gonna allow that.
So one of his brother, is it Daniel Oss? Is he part
Daniel
of
Oss?
Bodner,
and then there was a director, a mechanic, a helper, a swanee,
press person,
a whole posse.
Yeah.
Jesus. All right. So where's he going? Or it's not. He's not going.
Don't know.
All right. One more fan question, and then.
Yeah. Then we'll wrap it up. So the last one is from John.
That's the question.
Got one more question from a soul at the pub. John Emmett asks, with the altitude training ability and tax advantages, why don't pro cyclists that live in Girona live in Andorra? Well, a lot do. We have apartments in both places and spend majority of our time in Andorra because purely, like you say, for the training, for the altitude availability. And a lot of people just choose to live in Girona and don't live in Andorra because that's where they want to live.
Mm.
Probably,
it's not as easy as just living in Andorra. You have to, you have to be in a position that fortunate enough to live. You have to, it's quite a process as well. It takes a while to get residency. You have to be pretty secure here. I would never say to someone who just turned pro or something, just go live in Andorra, because it's a massive investment. And until you're pretty sure you're going to stick around in the sport, it took us, I was here 4 or 5 years before I decided, all right, I'm probably here stable enough now to actually pack up and move to Andorra.
Me too.
But I'll tell you what, I love it up there. It's been a good change for me living in Andorra. Yeah. I mean, I still go to Girona every now and then and see the boys and,
have three beers.
Actually, every time I'm relaxed, when I'm on a holiday, I go to Girona. Girona's my holiday you know, when I don't really have to, and then when I have to work. I mean, it's just a thing. That's cycling now, altitude. Basically, live and die by altitude in Andorra.
Yeah,
2,000 meters.
Mm. And also, yeah, like we spend most of the time in Andorra, but obviously, like early in the season when the weather's bad, you see like Belgian guys that live in Belgium and stuff. They go to the south of Spain to train, and we go to Girona and train because you can't in Andorra when it's snowing. And but yeah, that's probably didn't really answer your question, but that'll do. Good show, boys. Been good to have you back, George.
Thanks, man. Terrible to be here.
Touch that intro up for next week, and was nice to just reconnect.
Might head down the pub
and have a beer by myself. Like, share, subscribe.